Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine show. I'm Michael Hoge, your host. Glad to have you with us here on the program as you listen to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Exciting and interesting things to talk about during the course of the hour today. But first, let's go just about a half a block down the street. If I had a really good baseball and the window was open, I think I could hit the front of the Unicorn Theater just down the street where they are about to open their show, The Oldest Boy by Sarah Ruhl. Interesting show, interesting things to talk about, and it's a combination of puppetry and a very interesting storyline as well. I'm going to talk about that today with my guest. Paul Messner is with us. Paul of puppet fame.
Glad to be here.
Nice to have you once again. Yeah. So Paul is well known for his puppets, both here, all around the country, perhaps even abroad, too. Took your puppets abroad once, didn't you?
A couple times, and maybe I'm going to India. My associate, Mike Corner, is going to Germany in a few weeks.
This would be an interesting show for you to take abroad to, wouldn't it? Because of the ramifications. Well-known puppeteer in the area for many, many years. I don't mean to age you, Paul. You just have a lot of experience. I've heard you with many of the orchestras, Laria organizations.
We've been fortunate to perform with many of the arts organizations in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And we're adding one or two more this year with the Unicorn and later on with the Kansas City Ballet.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here again. All the wealth and expertise in that area you bring, which is why the Unicorn wanted you for this show, which is what we'll get into. Katie Kalaher is with us again. She plays the mother. She was last at the Unicorn in Nickel and Dimed. She has also performed with Spinning Tree Theater, the Kansas City Rep, the New Theater, American Heartland Theater. Oh, what a loss. Not to have the American Heartland Theater. Musical Theater Heritage, of course, Eubank Productions. I bet that was an experience for her. Has performed regionally in Jackson Hole, I wrote down. Performed in Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Yes, good old Jackson Hole.
Yeah, and also at the Fish Tank and the Living Room here in town.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Espy is with us as well. He voices, that's the word he gave to me, he voices the oldest boy. He is an artist in residence at St. Mark's Family and Child Development Center. Has narrated concerts, for instance, the Kansas City Symphony. It did Peter and the Wolf there. Performed at the Coterie and created theater pieces for the Nelson Atkins shows that they did over there. Alice in Wonderland was one of them who comes to mind. Welcome to the show. All of you, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Yes, it's great to be here.
Nice to be here.
Yeah.
Very interesting show, which goes a lot into culture. How they do things in the Buddhist religion and things of that nature. Would one of you feel more comfortable explaining the situation when a lama dies?
Yes.
He is replaced in what way, Katie?
Yeah, so in Tibetan Buddhist tradition, when a lama passes away, and a lama, one L lama, not like the animal, is a teacher in Buddhist tradition. When a lama passes away, it is believed that he will be reincarnated into another being. And there is a search that happens where the students of this lama will go and seek out the reincarnation of the lama who passed, and there's an examination that happens where they will take certain objects of the passed away teacher, maybe some prayer books or some beads or some bowls, and sort of go all around and seek out the reincarnation. And in our play, that's exactly what happens.
And it turns out to be your son in the show.
Indeed, yes.
What a dilemma you have. On one hand, you're probably very honored. On the other hand, you're losing that boy.
It's exactly that struggle. My character marries a Tibetan refugee, actually. And so my husband is very honored that our son was chosen in this way. But I certainly have a struggle between what is right for my child and what I want. It's certainly it certainly asks a lot of questions, this play, about non-attachment, about love, about religion, about East meets West. It's a beautiful piece, and it's been a challenge to work on, but a good challenge.
Online, I looked up some of the reviews. It had some wonderful reviews, some very, you know, very challenging, very thought-provoking. Words like that were used.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that audiences will come out both moved emotionally and also stimulated intellectually. They'll ask themselves some deep questions after they see this piece. Because it tugs at a heart place, but it also kind of... It asks questions of mysticism and magic. And one of the magic elements, actually, is this puppet that we've got here playing the oldest boy. And it's a wonderful use of puppetry that Sarah Rule, the playwright, uses, because the puppet is just this body, right? And the soul that passes through is, in our play, what we talk about is the thing that's more permanent, that the consciousness keeps on going and keeps on evolving. And I don't know if we want to talk about the device of the puppet and how beautiful it is. Alex Espy plays the oldest boy.
You do, Alex. Yeah. You voice the puppet.
And, correct.
But he's actually one of Paul's puppets.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And, you know, truth in whatever here. Mike Horner, my associate artistic director, actually made most of this puppet. And so he should get credit for that. And I'm helping direct, and Mike a little bit, but I've been there quite a few nights, helping direct Alex and Andy Meyer, who are performing the character, the oldest boy. It's an interesting use. It's a great casting choice by Sarah Rule. She wrote it in that, you know, how else are you going to get a three-year-old to be in a hour and 45-minute play night after night?
Sure. Well, let's go to the artistic part of it first. Within the mind of the character, now you're in the mind of a three-year-old boy.
Right.
Does he understand what is happening to him?
I think that he is trying to understand it. The way that I look at it is that he has this destiny within inside him, and it's just a matter of clearing the clouds to see what that destiny is.
I would imagine they had some criteria for picking, without giving too much of the story away, what were some of the things they were looking for?
Sure. Well, there are a few moments in the show which are moments of clarity, which support the thought that he is an actual reincarnated Lama. One of them is his test to see which items that are presented to him were his in a previous life.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would go a ways towards finding out.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. In our society today, I guess we don't have that type of belief system, so we would find that very unusual. Oh, it has to be a coincidence that you pick those particular
things. Exactly, and that's part of the journey. Is it a coincidence, or is it this predestiny within inside him?
Yeah, yes. I know, for instance, my character is constantly sort of battling that logic place, but it's some of the things that come out of the oldest boy's mouth about God and about heart and about, you know, mind, and he speaks often in ways that are just well beyond his years, and it sort of takes my character aback many times.
Did he always speak in such a wise manner, even before all of this became known?
You know, that's something that's before the action of the play, so I couldn't really answer that. I don't know if my character recognized it.
Oh, sure.
But... Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, well, probably didn't consider that. Until it happens, you really can't consider it.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the puppet aspect of that. Did you need a lot of instruction from Paul?
Having Paul throughout the process has just been invaluable. It would have been one thing for us to have just been given the puppet and to swim our way to find its soul, but having Paul through every rehearsal process, giving us notes, videotaping, looking back on the videos, it's really helped to better understand the puppet quicker.
And Paul often teaches actors to do this in shows. Is that always a challenge?
Well, this has been especially delightful because Alex and Andy are both professionals, and they took the part and the role very seriously, and they took their performance and manipulation of the puppet, gave it great regard, or giving it. And it's marvelous to see them both work very hard and achieve great results. And it's very satisfying. The puppet is you know, upstaging now and then anybody else on stage without doing very much. I won't mention the one scene because I want to beat it too hard and let people just discover it as they see it. But there's several times when you're like drawn to the puppet and he's doing the least of any character. He doesn't have any lines at that moment. But Alex and Andy are doing a great job of bringing this character to life. And it's very pleasing for, you know, to help watch that process unfold.
It is interesting how the puppets become real. As an audience member, you know they're not. But at a certain level, you think they do. You find yourself... I will sometimes find myself watching for the puppet's reaction to what another actor said. Now, of course, that's very difficult to do, but you find yourself doing that.
Well, that's part of acting with the puppet is reacting. Mm-hmm. And we talked early on about breathing, and we, you know, but it's been a really fun process. It's been great fun to work with Cynthia, kind of, you know, she's deferring to me on puppet matters, and of course I don't get stick my nose in. So the rest of the play, other than how the puppet interacts with how the, you know, you might do that. And it's been great fun.
When did you start doing puppets? How young were you? You were probably very young from what I recall.
Yeah, I was 12 when I started doing puppets at the local theater in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Wow.
And that was 38 years ago.
Oh, you don't
know. No, it's more than that. It's a lot more than that, come to think of it.
We won't tell.
All right.
We're talking to Paul Messner of Paul Messner Puppets and two of the members of the cast of The Oldest Boy, a play by Sarah Rule, opening on August 26th at the Unicorn Theater here of Kansas City. The number to call for more information is 816-531-7529. That also translates to 531-PLAY. And, of course, the Unicorn online is unicorntheater.org. We're speaking with Alex Espy, Katie Kalaherka, and Paul Messner about the show. Challenging situations, especially, I would think, for the family involved. You talked about your husband earlier. He was honored.
Absolutely. It's one of those, you know, it's a tough decision to make when, you know, there's a Dalai Lama quote that says the best relationships are when your love for each other exceeds your need for one another. And I think that that quote really illustrates the conflict my character has in this play of giving her son away to sort of a greater cause and, you know, allowing him to live what I come to believe is his purpose. And it's a tough choice. It's very emotional. But this play not only talks about the relationship between, you know, a mother and a son, a father and a son, but it also kind of highlights the relationship between a student and a teacher and what happens when, you know, you lose your teacher. And the llama character in our play really, his storyline really touches that loss. When he loses his teacher, he's incredibly, incredibly distraught. It's like his teacher was his mom and his dad both. And so, yes, the love between a student and a teacher and a husband and a wife and a mother and a son, this play speaks to all of those archetypes and what it's like to have attachment and how attachment is different than love.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Is it part of the story how they come to center on your son? Of the many that they could test, why did they come to test him?
These are questions we had to sort of answer ourselves, you know, in rehearsal. You know, we did a lot of research on what actually does happen in Tibet when they go and, you know, look for the reincarnation of a Lama who's passed. What was the name of the movie we saw?
The Unmistaken Child?
Yes, there's a film called The Unmistaken Child, and it details a documentary. It details this exact search, and a lot of times there's an astrological element, there's a mystical element. You know, if at the end of his life, if a Lama sort of turns his head one way, turns his head to the west, then, you know, they might take it as a sign, okay, well, we need to be going west when we look for his reincarnation. Or even sometimes the Lama might give clues, I plan to be, you know, a female reincarnation, or I plan to go, you know, in this area of the country or whatever it is. And so there's a lot of mystical elements that go into the seeking out of a reincarnated Lama. So we don't exactly know what the journey was between our Lama and Monk when they came to find our oldest boy, but they showed up. They didn't go away.
Well, Alex, did you know much about Buddhism before you got involved with this show?
I didn't, and that's been one of the things that's been so exciting, learning about Buddhism in addition to learning more about puppetry and how to make a puppet come alive with the soul. But no, not a whole lot about Buddhism.
Did you do any research with a local Buddhist community?
A little bit, yes. Cynthia and I went to, is it pronounced the Rhyme Center?
Rhyme Center.
And things like that.
Did you meet with Lama Chuck Stanchak?
Yes, we did.
And what kind of advice did he pass along to all of you?
It was a very brief meeting. It was a party for him, so he had a lot of people who were wanting his attention.
Yeah. They have services there.
Yes.
It's a regular Buddhist community here in town.
Yes.
So many different cultures here in Kansas City. It's it's amazing sometimes that all that you could learn. The story, of course, is the oldest boy, and that is the son of the family. Are there other people in the story other than you, your husband, the boy, and the visitors, as I'll call them?
Yeah, there's the monk and the llama, and then there's the boy, and there's the husband and the wife, and it's an intimate beast.
What I think Katie's not letting on here is she is on stage, I think, almost the entire play.
That is true. I do not leave the stage.
You want to go get some tea.
Yes.
I was putting this together in my mind and thinking, my God, Katie's on stage the entire play.
Yes, yeah. The story is told from the point of view of the mother, actually. And so it's been quite a demanding role, physically and emotionally. But, yeah, it's a welcome challenge for sure to not leave the stage for 2 hours.
When this part was presented for you, what were your thoughts about it? Was it in the vein, you know, I could never do anything like this?
No. When I read the piece, it spoke to me on so many different levels, and I was honored even to be called in, you know, to audition. And when I, you know, found out that I landed the part, I mean, I began working on it immediately that day. I mean, this is just one of those. Every now and then you get as an actor, hopefully, you get something, a role that just fits you, you know, and you want to give everything you possibly have to that. And that's this role for me.
Did you immediately go online or head to the library?
Well, you know, I have a background in not specifically Tibetan Buddhism. There are a lot of different sects of Buddhism.
Oh,
but,
yes. Uh-huh.
But in Buddhism in general, I mean, I've been a meditator since I was in high school, and I study spirituality and things like that. So that element of this piece spoke to me immediately. But as far as the other research, yes. I mean, I was almost, you know, actor/dramaturg as far as, because there's so much to learn about the specificity of the Tibetan faith. And, you know, my character's she's an intellectual, she's, you know, a literature professor, and so I wanted to learn about everything that she was studying in literature, and and of course just the amount of material I began to memorize just right away. just so I could get it under my belt, get comfortable.
In Alex's case, did you want to research Buddhism and learn all about it?
Very much so. I did come on board just a few weeks before the rehearsal process started, so I didn't have a whole lot of time. A lot of my preparation was working directly with the script and meeting Paul early and working with him a little bit with the puppet and things like that.
Well, what did Paul tell you right off the bat? He said, now this is going to be difficult. It's not going to be as hard as you think. What did Paul say?
We talked a lot about it. He said that the puppet will continue to learn from us, the puppeteers, and I have noticed that the more we work with him, the more he understands the things we are asking of him. He said that Tenzin, the puppet, is going to have good performances and bad performances. And I'm resting on that. So I won't beat myself up if it's not the best performance.
Yeah, but Michael, what Alex is referring to a little bit here is that this is a new puppet. It's a physically new puppet, and so its joints aren't worked in yet, and we haven't asked it to do anything. And Andy and Alex instantly started asking it to do stuff. And as you knew that, even because, or despite the fact that it's made out of plywood and bungee cord and cloth and all these parts, those do develop a memory. They develop a physical memory of the actions they're asking it to do, and as they work and discover more and more, as they work together too, it's a fairly complex thing. You have this figure that two different brains are trying to make it appear as one, and they can't verbalize that communication, and actually in the context of the play, they can't make eye contact very much. It would, it would distract the audience because they're both focusing on the character they're manipulating. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a mind meld for Andy and Alex, mm-hmm, to really be of one. And I think they're doing a great job.
I'll second that. And we all handle, and that's the other thing, is we all handle Tenzin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We each character, touches, carries, interacts. Yeah, with Tenzin at least once, if not multiple times during the show. And
every single actor in the show.
Yeah.
His puppet at some point.
Yeah.
And is always interacting with him throughout.
And we treat him just like another actor. I learned that he needs to be warmed up as well. We as actors warm up our bodies. And before every rehearsal, I have to warm up his head. He has his own little sets of exercises, things like that, just to make sure he is ready to go by rehearsal time.
Well, he has to be ready.
Oh,
does he have different costumes?
He has a few different
costumes. He does the most costume changes of anybody in the show, I think.
He does. You're right about that. He's a few.
Yeah, his own dressing room, a makeup person. I'm kidding.
He's such a diva, he won't do his own costume changes.
So yeah, somebody, exactly.
Yeah, they seem to take on a personality of their own, Paul. It's amazing how we believe that after a while. We do.
Yeah, we do sometimes. And this puppet, I think, is particularly pleasant and pretty accommodating for everything that's being asked of him. But that's because Andy and Alex are doing a great job of bringing him up, along with Katie.
Do you think of your puppets, Paul, as real people?
No. They're useful tools to help act. In this case, this is an actor, another actor in the play. He's just not a living, breathing actor, and he requires two more actors to manipulate, to bring to life. So I don't think of them, ever as a real thing, but there's a real character there.
Uh-huh.
And there's a real, that's the marvelous thing of this, without trickery. And there's no attempt on our part, both within the making of the puppet, to try and make it look like a human. We purposely kind of stepped away from that. And there's a few things, and he's wearing real kids' clothes, but we're not trying to make the puppet look realistic. This is a purposeful, it's a puppet.
It's a choice, yeah.
But then, when it does come to life and does things and acts throughout the play, it's very pleasing because we're, obviously, this is a sophisticated audience who's going to come to the Unicorn to see shows. They're going to come see challenging, interesting plays. And it would be off-putting if we tried to pretend it wasn't a puppet. So there's no pretense in that regard. It's, we're acknowledging this is a puppet, and we're not hiding Alex and Andy. They're there mm-hmm. in full view. But pretty quickly they disappear because the focus of their energy is this actor they're bringing to life.
Oh, sure. Very thought-provoking, of course. Very and far-ranging, perhaps, in the thinking of the playwright. Of course, mm-hmm. this is a tradition. It's happened for many, many thousands and thousands of years in their belief system. So to them, this is normalcy. To this family, at least this mother, on the other hand, it's beyond something she probably would have anticipated.
Oh, yeah. It's a shocker. It's an understatement.
Well, The Oldest Boy opens on August the 26th at the Unicorn Theater. Unicorn, by the way, is at 3828 Main, just right down the street from us here at KKFI. We're at 39th and Main, and they're just half a block down the street. If you MapQuest things, you need the zip code 64111, the website to go to where they have some wonderful pictures and other features that you can look at is unicorntheater.org. And, of course, the number to call for more information, 816-531-7529. And the 7529 also translates to PLAY, which, of course, has been a benefit over the years to the Unicorn. People, if you have a catchy phone number,
yeah, people will call it.
People will tend to remember it and call it to learn more about the Oldest Boy, one of the more... Well, I shouldn't say unusual, because it's not really unusual. If you were a Buddhist, this wouldn't be unusual at all. But it is within the context of the family and as they interact and are surprised, I'm sure, as well. I want to thank my guest for being with us. Paul Messner with us once again, the master of puppetry here in Kansas City.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you very much for being here. Kathy Kalaherka, she plays the mother, and she has a very interesting challenge in this show. And Alex Espy, who voices, at least, the oldest boy, along with...
Andy Meyer
as well, as Give Life to the Oldest Boy in the show, The Oldest Boy, opening August 26th and running through September 20th at the Unicorn Theater. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
We're going to take a break. When we return, lots more to send your way. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Well, the season of the Kansas City Ballet is about to begin anew again. And here to tell us all about it, the new season, the dance day they have coming up, a lot of exciting things going on, is Devin Carney. He is the Kansas City Ballet Artistic Director, born in the musical city of New Orleans, joined the New Orleans Ballet, has been with the Boston Ballet in a 21-year dance career, danced many leading roles. Giselle was one of them, Swan Lake another, and interestingly enough, Swan Lake is one of the shows in the season this right. year. Was the ballet master at the Boston Ballet, artistic director in Boston, taught around the world and performed around the world. In Cincinnati was the associate artistic director. I hope I've got all these right. And is the artistic director here in there Kansas you know. City. We welcome Devin Carney once again to our microphones. Thank you for coming.
It's great to be here, Michael.
Interesting to hear about the new season and mm-hmm. especially the new dance day, which is coming up. Right. Now, that's an event that the public can go see.
That's
and
right.
you need to go to the Todd Bollinger Center for Dance and Creativity, the new offices and rehearsal space for the ballet. It's down by Union Station. That building in itself, Devin, is a whole story.
Oh, my goodness. It's a beautiful building. You know, it's a 100-year-old former power plant, coal-firing power plant that actually powered Union Station. So it actually was built before Union Station so that then they could build Union Station. And then, of course, it was when coal power went away, it was shuttered for almost 50 years before Kansas City Ballet took on the project of renovating it, gutting it, and making it into a gorgeous dance facility. It is such a beautiful space for dance.
It's a lovely place. It's a great place to rehearse.
And, absolutely.
With seating, so if
That's
you
right.
invite people in to
yeah.
see a rehearsal or so,
mm-hmm.
you can do that.
That's right. We have about 180-seat small house theater that is a great intimate setting for dance. And, of course, that's where a lot of what happens on Casey Dance Day will occur, is inside that one area where there's seating.
Yeah, for the fifth year in a row,
that's right,
now you're hosting Dance Day, and what a great idea.
It's so exciting to have a chance to really invite the community into our facility and get a chance to really experience dance in many, many different forms. And sort of like a smorgasbord, you know, to a little tapas treat, you know, to really taste a lot of different dance forms, all in the course of a very large one-day event where all of our studio spaces are being utilized in several different ways. And, of course, I think it's important to mention that this is all free.
Everybody likes that.
I know. It's great. And you get free dance classes. There's all sorts of choices of dance classes to try out, such as African dance or Indian or jazz or modern or tap, or, of course, there's ballet as well. Lots of different classes that you can touch your toes in the water and see if you like it.
Yeah.
And, of course, we offer all these classes throughout the course of the season through our academy. So, of course, there's the opportunity. If you find yourself interested in one of those classes, you can come back and try it out over the course of the whole season. And, of course, on top of that, we've got a lot of performing going on in that space you were mentioning, the one with the seating. Starting from about 9 o'clock in the morning, we've got different types of performances going on all the way through until 6 o'clock at night. So you've got lots of different types of dance going on, from community dance to world dance. And then you also have Kansas City Ballet will be the final concluding event of the evening, or if you'd say the later afternoon, with our second company, who have are currently, I just came from rehearsal, and we are preparing work for that programming. And we are also going to be rehearsing in the course of this week. We are rehearsing, the company has actually started back, the main company has started back, and we're rehearsing a ballet by Helen Pickett, which is one of the pieces at the end of this season, and it's being staged right now. So we'll get a chance to show a little bit of what we're doing with that as well this Saturday for the performance.
Well, it's exciting for the public to see an actual dance rehearsal.
That's right.
See how hard they actually work.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot
I'll
of sweat.
I'll bet you work them hard, too.
Oh, we try. They do it on their own.
Starts at 9:15 with the classes. Then such things after that as the Starlight Stars of Tomorrow.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Stars of Tomorrow. Alvin Ailey Camp Kids.
Yeah.
Kansas City Youth Ballet.
Mm-hmm.
Then some of those groups that we talked about.
Right.
Ireland, Greece, Spain,
mm-hmm.
Philippines, Mexico, perhaps African, Native American, world classes, Sterling Dance Company.
Right.
They've been on my show before. And, of course, that open rehearsal with the Kansas City Ballet. They're going to see what it's going to be like if they try to reach to the top.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's all of a friendly outreach program for
That's
the ballet.
Right.
And, again, it's at the Todd Bollinger Center for Dance and Creativity. It's just west of the Union Station. The National Archives is kind of set in between.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And then you're on the other side of that building to the west mm-hmm. of the National Archives. The website to go to for more information about any and all of this, kcballet.org, and the number to call for still further information, 816-931-2232, for more information on Dance Day. And we'll come back and tell you a few more things about that as well. But I want Devin to talk about the new season coming up. I should probably go in order, but I have to talk about Swan Lake. Devin was actually in Swan Lake and danced Swan Lake in his past, and this year you are putting on Swan Lake.
That's right. For the first time in the history of Kansas City Ballet, we're going to be doing a full-length Swan Lake, which is really a milestone for any ballet company, and it's sort of like if you're going to be a ballet company and really have sort of a full, diverse offering on your repertoire, Swan Lake needs to be a part of that. And it is one of the greatest classical ballets ever. It is one of only three, interestingly enough, that Tchaikovsky actually wrote scores for ballet. The other two are Nutcracker and Sleeping Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful score. Of course, it's going to be performed by our phenomenal Kansas City Symphony, which I'm very grateful that they are involved in our season again. But it's a landmark role for the two leads, Swan Lake, with Odette Odile. It's a very famous dual role that one female plays, both a good swan and a bad swan, as well as Siegfried, and that's the role, of course, that I had the opportunity to perform many times during my career. But it's really an exciting ballet full of the great moments of the classical repertoire with, you know, 24 swans and tutus and that beautiful moonlit stage over the lake. And it's just one of those ballets that dancers adore doing and audiences just love to come to it. And it's enchanting and it's a fairy tale and it's quite an exciting evening.
And people know the music from the show. They may not even realize they know
it,
but they know it.
Right? And actually, one of the most famous pieces of choreography to the majority of the individuals in the world is in Swan Lake, and that's the Dance of the Four Little Swans with the four women who hold their hands together, which has been parodied, for instance, in the Carol Burnett Show.
Sure.
And Lucille Ball did something with Four Little Swans on her show, you know, when she was around. So, I mean, it's one of those things that modern culture has kind of taken on as a way to have fun with dance, and it's iconic. It's very iconic, the Four Little Swans. Of course, there's all sorts of great choreography in the ballet, and it's all being staged by me, which is exciting. I'm really excited to do this. It's not my first time, but it's still exciting to have the opportunity to give this ballet to Kansas City dancers and to the city of Kansas City.
When you danced the show many times, many years ago, well, I shouldn't say many.
That's all right.
I've only seen you for myself.
A few years ago, yeah.
Did you think at the time, now, if I were going to do this, I might change a little? Did that ever happen?
You know, when I was younger, no. Oh, I was more concerned about doing my best I could, but I think as I grew up, if you want to say, and got to the latter part of my career, of course, I was already starting to think, you know, if I get a chance to do this someday, what would I do? You know, so, yeah, there's a little bit of that that occurred in the latter part of my career.
Yeah, well, people like to put their own mark on their own work. It's hard to do in a show like that because it's so well known.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine there are some people that are so expertise that they would probably say, well, now he changed that.
Well, of course. But there are many versions. So there is no one authoritative version, and that's what's great about all these great classics is there are several versions because they were danced, you know, over 100 years. They've been around, like, gosh, since the late 1800s.
Sure.
Just like Giselle or like Sleeping Beauty. And, you know, different people have different takes on what the storyline should be like and what the steps should be like. And, of course, culturally, when you're in, say, you're in Italy as opposed to in Russia, you know, stylistically things are going to be somewhat different.
Mm-hmm.
So, indeed, you will see there are no two Swan Lakes that are actually identical. Unless it's, of course, staged by the same person.
Well, that will take place in February, and I should have gone in order.
That's right.
I will now go back and go in order. The season kicks off on October 9th with the Three Musketeers. Mm-hmm. Now, swashbuckling. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, it's going to be so fun. I can't wait. And there's so much sword fighting. The men get to just knock it out of the ballpark. It's like guys everywhere. You know, there's all sorts of incredible male dancing. Of course, there's the story based on Alexandre Dumas, of the Three Musketeers. The choreographer is Andre Bukowski, who actually was a principal dancer with New York City Ballet back in the 50s, and who has had choreographed quite a lot for opera as well. So it's a very operatic kind of feel to it. It's bold and it's big, with sweeping scenes. And like I said, the men just really get to have a great time. And we actually have, they need to be trained in stage combat before we even get started in rehearsals. And, you know, because safety is everything. But, you know, of course, what we want to do is get there and get out on stage and make it look authentic and real and exciting. And it's going to be a really great time. And, of course, there's that wonderful love story between D'Artagnan and Constance is her name. It's a full length, by the way. There's nothing else on that program. So it's going to be quite exciting with music by Verdi. So it's I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be great.
Why do we all love those swashbuckling shows, the movies, the Errol Flynn movies?
Errol Flynn. There it is, Michael.
Right.
Errol Flynn.
So exciting.
En garde.
So that's The Three Musketeers. It will open on October the 9th.
Right.
We'll be talking more about these shows as the season goes on. We generally do an interview about each show.
Yeah, which is exciting. And love that.
It certainly is. December 5th. Nutcracker's back.
Mm.
New
mm-hmm.
staging.
Yep, it's going to be quite an event. We are doing a full new production of it, and you know, it's the Nutcracker is such a phenomenal portion of any holiday in any major city across this country, and I'm really excited to be presenting this all new sets, all new choreography, all new costumes. Of course, the music is the same, Tchaikovsky. So we're safe on that. You know, it's very familiar music, and the story will be very familiar. There's nothing that's going to really radically change in terms of storyline. But certainly, there's going to be a eye-popping color on stage. The sets are incredible, and, you know, we're starting to actually see the sets come to life. We're at that point in the production, the building of the production, so it's really, really exciting to see the photographs from all the different shops around the country that are building our sets, and to start seeing the photographs coming in of what's going on. And it's really happening, Michael.
Oh.
And it is exciting. Next week, for instance, actually it's later this week, our costume designer is in town, and she's going to be fitting dancers. So it's starting to come to life, and I'm going to get a chance to start choreographing on our company, which I've actually started at the beginning of last season. I was starting to work on it a little bit. My first rehearsal for this Nutcracker that's coming up in December, the first rehearsal was in mid-April. When I had a chance to still work with some of the company dancers. So
you may have thought you've seen the Nutcracker before, but you haven't really seen the Nutcracker. That's what's interesting about the arts.
Right. Right?
You can change the show around. And
yeah, I love
it. Seems like new.
Yeah, and in this case, it will be new.
Yes, right.
And, on top of this, I neglected to mention that we just finished 4 days of auditions for all the children's roles that are going to be casted by students from our academy, and that was an incredible experience to get a chance to see all of our students and to see them just working so hard. I mean, they are doing such a great job, and there are a lot of roles, by the way.
And what a big break for them to actually be in a Kansas City Ballet show. Maybe a small part.
Yeah.
Hey. They're in a professional show.
That's right.
At such a young time in their life. Has to be very exciting for them. That's the Nutcracker. New staging begins December the 5th. We talked about Swan Lake. That show is slated for February 19th. And you talk about how you prepare for so long ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the way things are done these days.
Yep, you have to. It's the only way to really make the product the best it can be. And, of course, you want your dancers to have the best experience and be as prepared as possible. And there is a limit to the amount of time we get to have them. But, of course, my ultimate goal is that I can provide the highest quality product, experience, performance for the Kansas City audiences that come to see us perform.
Oh, sure. I would imagine the principals probably know a year ahead of time that they will be in the show.
Relatively speaking, yes. They start to know what's going on. And then there's the core. And this is an iconic corps de ballet. Swan Lake is defined by the corps de ballet. And without the corps, the Swan Lake really falls flat on its face. It'll have two left feet if it doesn't have. Sorry, I had to go there. You've got to have an awesome, awesome core. And it is a huge core. It's very big. It's the largest corps de ballet that Kansas City audiences will see of our Kansas City dancers, Kansas City Ballet dancers. 24 swans simultaneously moving on stage.
So if you're interested in Swan Lake, It's February 19th, but I would make inquiries even now.
Yes, I would. That. Tickets are selling actually quite fast.
Yeah, for the Nutcracker, probably.
Oh, yeah.
And then right. The opening show is Three Musketeers, probably that one as well.
What a season.
New Moves. We don't want to jinx you April 1st, but it's no joke that New Moves will open on April
1st. That's right. No April Fools on this one. Yeah, that's a biggie. Of course, New Moves is that one time of the year that we get to really step out on the edge and be somewhat more experimental, choreographically speaking, which is really important in the dance world and for a dance company to have that opportunity to really try out some new moves, literally. And we have some lovely guests coming from other places around the country who will be choreographing on our company as well as some of our company dancers. And there will be seven world premieres that will be seen. It'll be in that studio space you mentioned earlier for Casey Dance Day. It's that same studio space at the Todd Bollinger Center for Dance and Creativity. We have that lovely studio performance space, and we'll be doing that over two weekends. And that sells out really quick because it is so intimate. It's very up close. You get to really feel the heat from the dancers. You get to hear their breathing. You get to see them sweating. And it almost feels like you're sitting on the stage with them dancing around you. Oh. It can be so intense. And that's what's great about it. It's visceral. You're like right there in the moment with them.
And as one patron, I heard one patron say, this has been a few years ago now.
Yeah.
In fact, this was it was even at the Lyric. It was several years ago. Said, so I actually got some sweat on me. And how excited she was to talk about that.
Glorious sweat.
Glorious sweat for that. Well, that's New Moves. It opens right. April the 1st. Rite of Spring is on May the 6th.
What a big show. What a grand finale to the end of our season. This, too, will be a production. There are four works on this program. We're titling it Rite of Spring because obviously the big grand finale is the music of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. And it's a large, large work that involves most of the company. And it is the full score of Rite of Spring by Stravinsky, which was an extremely controversial piece of music when it was first performed. Done to the choreography of Adam Hoagland, who is a nationally recognized choreographer, who also is a Princess Grace Award recipient, and has had an amazing career, choreographically speaking. He's very young for his amount of experience he's already had. And I'm thrilled to be presenting his first work here for Kansas City Ballet audiences. And he's got a very dynamic way of moving. And this Rite of Spring is very intense, and there's big sets. And, of course, you know the music is just so pounding and driving and forceful. And the choreography certainly steps up and meets that music head on. And I can't wait to see that come to life. I had the chance to actually be... when I was at Cincinnati Ballet as Associate Artistic Director, I had the chance to work with him on that Rite of Spring. So I had some firsthand experiences of working with him as it was being staged on that company. I'm really excited to bring it to Kansas City. It's worth it. You know,
I can tell you're holding back on me. I can tell how excited you are about the season.
Yeah.
Trying to sound calm.
Well, there's more. There's more. There's two other works, three other works. One is Helen Pickett, who is, like I told you earlier, she is going to be here starting this week working on her ballet, which will be on this program that closes our season. Very colorful. It's intense color in this work. And Petal is the name of it. But it's a very interesting lighting technique of closing off the wings and actually putting the dancers more in a box, a three-sided box. And then it's all white. So all the light that's shown on the stage, it's like a surround sound of light because the light doesn't disappear into the wings because the wings are walls.
Oh, wow.
It's a really cool technique. And it's very immersive, the work. And it's very fast and challenging choreography. She is a world-renowned choreographer, and I'm very grateful that she has allowed Kansas City Ballet to do one of her signature works. And I think it's going to be a great challenge for our dancers, one that will stretch their technique and get them to a broader landscape of choreographic ability that they can handle. And she is a hot commodity these days. So we're lucky to have her be a part of this season. And then on top of that, believe it or not, okay, you think that's awesome, right?
There's
spring,
more?
There's more if you order before midnight tonight. On top of that, you've got Helen Pickett, you have Adam Hoagland's Rite of Spring, and then you've got Victor Plotnikoff, who's an emerging choreographer in the New England area, who's done a lot of work up there and in Europe. He's doing a work on the program, which is a New World Symphony, Dvorak's New World Symphony, Movement Number 2. Helen's work is to Philip Glass music. And then on top of that, you've got Yuri Posikov, who is the resident choreographer for San Francisco Ballet, who is another extremely well-known, well-respected choreographer. And we are doing his ballet called Diving Into the Lilacs. So if you hadn't noticed, there's a bit of a spring theme here.
Yeah.
Petal, diving into lilacs, Rite of Spring. I've really loved this program and the way that it's come together as really sort of a kickoff to spring for the whole city. And it's going to be an amazing evening of dance.
I'll bet so. Information, tickets, season tickets perhaps, tickets to the individual shows for the Kansas City Ballet can be found online at kcballet.org or the number to call for more information, 816-931-2232. And, of course, don't forget Dance Day, the fifth annual Dance Day, kind of a preliminary event to the season starting, happening on this coming Saturday, August the 29th. Again, the number to call, 816-931-2232, or online at kcballet.org. I want to thank my guest, Evan Carney, for being with us, telling us all the inside information, what to expect. I like inside
information. Who does?
We all do. Thanks so much for being with us as the Kansas City Ballet kicks off another season. Great. Performances for the most part at the Kauffman Center and Dance Day at the Todd Bollinger Center for Dance and Creativity. That is two buildings to the west of Union Station on Pershing down there. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
The Jazz Insider is coming up next. Great jazz he has coming up. Jazz from 1 to 3, then the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.